extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, and presenting from his parents' computer room, not sure where, Tom Bogert, making his full debut, his first cap.
The Peace here on Award Extra winner Time. Of the month. Tom Poker.
Yes, the peacemaker. Is that what these are, correct? The Peacemaker Award winner of the month. Welcome, Tom. And this is your first appearance, obviously. This is a sort of January camp for you. Yeah. How do you feel? What are you nervous about? What's sort of on your mind here? What do you hope to prove?
Where were you when you got the call?
Look,
who was the first person you told when you got call?
I'm massively honored. This is a big opportunity. Look, I'm going to put my head down, you know, work hard, you know, take what the game gives me, not try to do too much, you know, doing it for my family, for my friends, for everybody back home. Just try to make everybody proud here.
Do you have any concerns about the speed of conversation here, you know, taking a step up to the full-time podcast game? Do you think maybe you take some time to adapt, or are you ready?
I'm just going to, you know, complete a couple five-yard passes, get in the game, and hope that, you know, my internet keeps up with the big boys here.
All right, that would be ideal. It is our final show of 2021. Charlie Davies is off on this Thursday. He is somewhere in Disney World or Disneyland. I'm not sure where he is, but he's having a good time.
I think Charlie's only a Florida guy. I don't think he goes out.
Yeah, I feel like he wouldn't go all the way to the West Coast. It's a little too much to bring the family.
Classic New England snowbird move.
Yeah, we wish the best for Charlie. You'll see him in the new year. Just a little bit of housekeeping here before we jump into what is a crazy packed show. I mean, we're talking 2022 schedule release.
Season's We've over. Got Weeby. There's nothing to talk about. We're
nothing to
chill.
Talk about. Exactly. Yeah, we're going to be lucky to fit this into an hour and a half. CCL draw, of course, went down. We've got Tom here, and I'm just retweeting Tom. That's my Twitter account for the better part of the next 2 months, is just retweeting Tom reports. Charlotte's expansion draft went down. That feels like ancient history. They made some big trades. We'll talk through those. Free agency is open. There's some names flying around the rumor mill right now. We have a ton of odds and ends, whether it be trades that went down, extensions signed, etc. Talking Sebastian Legette, Paul Areola, DeJuan Jones, Dylan Nealis, etc. The biggest story is the winter transfer window, MLS Cup odds for 2022, and still somehow a mailbag that Anders, I'm sure, will tell us we have to skip, but we shall see when we get there.
Anders,
here is your schedule coming up. December 15th, which was yesterday, Wednesday, end of year waivers went down. We haven't heard a word on that, so TBD. Free agency opened. Reentry process stage 1 is December 17th. Stage 2 is December 23rd. My new theory on reentry is that I react when it happens, not before. So we're not really going to talk much reentry on this show. Super Draft is January 11th. Our first show back will be January 10th. It'll be a full Super Draft preview, and then we'll have a bunch of interviews, et cetera, et cetera. And then the season's going to start on February 26th. So there it is for you, the full rundown. Here is your schedule big dates. You can go see the schedule at MLSsoccer.com and on the MLS app. You can go start making plans, whether it be booking flights or hotels or whatever it is. CONCACAF World Cup qualifying starts January 27th. That's through the February 2nd window there. CONCACAF Champions League will start February 15th. The first two windows are the 15th through the 17th and the 22nd through the 24th. We'll chat through the draw here in a second. Opening day, February 26th. Heineken Rivalry Week, July 8th to 17th. The 2022 All-Star Game presented by Target is August 10th. Decision day is October 9th. It's a little earlier, of course, because the World Cup in 2022 in a non-traditional time. The Audi 2022 MLS Cup playoffs begin in October. I have no other details other than that. And MLS Cup is November 5th, which is a full month earlier
than
MLS Cup in 2021.
We know it's a month between Decision Day and MLS Cup, right? So we know it's going to be straight through, which is cool.
Yeah.
And obviously there's not going to be an international break because the World Cup's coming up. So it'll be a unique setup. And I think that for all fans, I think this is pretty exciting to see what this will look like. And maybe it'll be possible going forward as Arsene Wenger tries to send us all to space and change the world or whatever he's doing.
I hear they're going to sell NFTs to make that happen.
Probably. That's crypto, blockchain.
It's like a crypto NFT combo game here. They just got it. You know, once UEFA figures out how to do a draw, they'll get on board. Sure. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
No conflict.
But look, Yeah, 2022 is going to be a little bit of a strange year. We all know that because of the timing of the World Cup. I think one thing to really focus on, if you're an MLS fan, a soccer fan throughout the world, and we're joking about it here, is how that schedule in 2023 and beyond, whether it be the international breaks or otherwise, starts to sort of dictate what MLS's schedule might look like. You have the League's Cup coming in 2023 in a big way. You know, it'll obviously be back in 2022. Let's go! But in 2023, it will be that full big boy tournament. So there's a lot to think about, and there will be more change coming. Just get used to that. Here are some details on the schedule. Just to give you an idea, look, a lot of people like to talk about midweek games. At most, 5 midweek games going to go down despite it being compressed into 225 days here, and no consecutive midweek games in MLS. Now, look, you have other competitions, so that's not to say that there won't be a lot of midweek games, but as far as league play goes, 5 is the maximum, and there will not be consecutive weeks with midweek MLS regular season games. National TV-wise, The Athletic has a good breakdown of how many games per team, basically. You can go check that out. We'll reference them a lot in this show. Jonathan Tannenwald did do the count. You know he's on top of this stuff. 32 weekends in the calendar in 2022 with games scheduled, and 27 of those have free-to-air games. So that's like ABC, Fox, Univision, Unimas, games that you just need an antenna or whatever it is to access. That is good news. So we'll take a closer look at that. You can go check out on MLSsoccer.com all the breakdowns of national TV, etc. We're going to take a look at the games themselves. Let's start with this. Dave, give me an opener, February 26th weekend, and give me a rivalry game in July. What are the two on that little bucket that you're looking forward to?
So I don't know if you said it, but I think it's July 7th to July 17th is rivalry week for everyone.
8th to 17th.
8th to 17th.
Yep. I said it, but I know when I go into my list mode that you just check out completely.
Sure. I didn't even know we started the show, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a lot of droning in the background.
For opener, it's obvious to me. It's the Portland Timbers coming off MLS Cup loss at home, hosting the New England Revolution at Providence Park. That one's February 26th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fox. I mean, you're talking about a Revs team that didn't really play against the Western Conference. Now you're playing against the team that hosted MLS Cup. Are we talking about a post-Blanco, post-Valeri Portland Timbers for the first time ever? Or is Blanco coming back? What do the Revs look like with Tejan Buchanan gone now? I think there's a ton of intrigue, a ton of quality, and the moment. I mean, I was just at Providence Park for a big game. You know the moment will be there, and it'll feel like a huge game. So to me, that's the one that stands out for opening weekend. And then for rivalry week, it's Charlotte. First time ever in the league, they're going to play against Nashville, which is one of the closer drives. That's a new regional rival for Nashville. And I know when I was in Nashville for the playoffs, I talked to a bunch of fans who were excited about Charlotte coming into the league and sort of making a triangle with Atlanta that they'd have. And we're hearing crazy numbers about what Charlotte's going to have for their home opener at that stadium. And you'd assume as it goes through the season, and especially for a game like that, it'll just get bigger and bigger. And so it's exciting to have that map fill in. I think we were all fans of MLS where, you know, people on Reddit would put up the map and it was just empty space across the U.S. Now it's starting to fill in and more fans have more access to games.
Tom, you have the honors here of being the front man. You're the face of Anders' top opener in rivalry week. So do your best Anders impression now, how you might think he would sell these.
Before you do this, I want you to think about this. Imagine you wake up every day with the bluest skies and the greenest mountains because you're in Seattle. I need you to get into that mindset and assume that you invented the sport and you are Soccer City USA. Now you can begin.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is you know, the first sign of you guys not trusting me. It just starts with, here, give Anders' take. It's like the game model. This is the position you're playing. This is what you do. You turn when I say turn. You pass when I say pass. You're a robot. You don't think about it. These are all the triggers. And just go. So I'm taking Anders here.
Look,
I'm not going to be able
once
to
you can follow
well
directions, you can freelance, all right? Once you...
that's a great quality.
That's the deal.
If you're looking at your resume and saying, oh, you know, I follow directions really well, that's not a strong point. That can't be one of the first couple things.
I don't know. I got a 4-year-old, man, and he's still struggling.
Thank you for comparing me to your 4-year-old. I appreciate that a
saying,
lot.
That's another. You've progressed. Look at that progress from you.
I progressed to a 4-year-old.
You're
how
a completely different podcaster than you were 25 years ago, Tom.
How many people have you asked before me? Like, geez, I might be, must be really dead. It's like when Domi Torrent was saying Hébert was their ninth option at center forward. It's like, yeah, screw it, we'll get this guy. Anyway,
look how Hébert worked out.
That Anders is looking forward to. Yeah. The games that Anders are looking forward to via me, opening weekend, LA Galaxy versus the defending champs, New York City FC. That's going to be a good one. We'll see. Probably not Tati Castellanos. So who are NYCFC going to replace him with? They seem to have a lot of flexibility when it comes to that, you know, top end of the roster. What will this City Football Group, Global Network, kind of come up with a replacement? I'm very excited to see that. LA Galaxy, year two of Greg Vanney, and, you know, their own open DP spot. You know, there's talks of Christian Pavone. There's about 15 to 25 teams trying to sign him. We'll see where that goes. And now, obviously, for Anders' pick, the rivalry week, the first Seattle-Portland game where soccer was invented and all of that fun. Do I even need to do anything else? Can you guys hear the droning yeah. of Anders, of all of Seattle, everything? I don't need to give anything. It's just all there.
Well, Anders would say it's proper that the first Seattle-Portland game of the year would occur in Seattle at Lumen Field. And that's just a natural way to begin that Cascadia rivalry. Really the only one that matters in Cascadia, according to Anders.
The only game that matters. Just throw away the regular season. Just, you know, play Seattle versus Portland a few times. And then
if Portland fans would like to file by the trophy cabinet for the Sounders as they come into the stadium, that would be fine. That's acceptable. So you can do that. All right, I'll give mine here. Opener. Nashville comes west. They're in Seattle on opening day on Fox. I took this before Anders could. I really think this is one of the more interesting scheduling storylines of the year. Nashville going from the east, where they've been really good in their first two expansion seasons, and, you know, maybe even this year on the cusp of being truly great. Now they go into a different conference where they have less experience against those teams, where they'll travel a little bit more, and where they may not be
probably more than anybody in league history.
Yeah, well, Vancouver's still got a lot of travel to do.
It's a trip to Orlando. Yeah,
Vancouver's like, hold on, man. Hold on. We do a lot of flying. But I just am so curious to see how they adapt to the West and how they fit into the West and how they improve year to year on these last two. So we'll see what happens with them. I like that one on Fox on opening day. I believe that's on Sunday, February 27th. I also want to just throw out stadium openings because we haven't hit those yet. So you start with March 5th. That's Charlotte, Bank of America Stadium. They got the Galaxy in here, so you can see the Galaxy getting a lot of play on national TV. That one's on Fox on March 5th. This is going to break the all-time record for attendance. They're shooting for 74,000. It looks increasingly like they'll get that. It's $15 for a ticket. So they're like, that is, you know, to go see that match, the first ever home game. If you're in Charlotte or you're around Charlotte and you're like, I don't know, man, you can get in for $15. Dave, you and I have been to so many like openers, first evers, whether it be stadium firsts or it be club firsts. It is always just an incredible emotional day of newness and of joy. And a lot of times the result, if it's not a win, doesn't really matter. If it is a win, it just is an amplifier. It's just so fun.
It's also smart from the team because that's how FC Cincinnati started. Right? That city came out of nowhere as a major soccer city, and now we see
the
environment.
March.
But that whole thing built on University of Cincinnati's campus was affordable tickets for students in the upper deck and all of that. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, this is fun. There's 45,000 people chanting and enjoying this. So it's going to be a cool start for Charlotte, and it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, no doubt. So the previous record was an Atlanta United record. No surprise there. So they're looking to break that one on March 5th at Bank of America Stadium.
And then the Josie Altidore JPA Beckham game?
No. That was an Atlanta game. That's a class, though. Is that more like the Clint Mathis JPA game?
This is the tri-state area over here. New Jersey, New York. We got you.
Okay. All right. Hey, look. May 1st, Nashville, Union. Nashville Stadium actually is the largest capacity soccer-specific stadium in the U.S., and that one opens on May 1st against the Union, which is a playoff rematch, of course, and now an East-West game in 2022. So that's going to be really cool as well. I can't wait to see what Nashville can do there. And that's another wrinkle in their move west, which is they're going to be on the road basically for, almost 2.5 months. So we'll see how they fare with that road trip. All right, go check out the schedule at MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app. Plan your year. It's nice that it's out at this time that we have the full thing. You can get schedule in place or, you know, like hotel, flights, circle stuff on the calendar, convince whoever you need to convince to go with you or to let you leave, etc. Let's talk CCL draw. That went down. Good job to CONCACAF. No redos
one
here.
One time. They got it on their first.
It has been redone in the past in CONCACAF, so I don't want to like blow them up too much as we make jokes
about UEFA.
No one
talks
about
the past. People don't care.
Exactly. All in the present.
Seattle Sounders. Right. We don't make enough jokes about CONCACAF.
Sounders Motagua, so back to Honduras for the Sounders. CF Montreal against Santos Laguna, the only MLS team to get a Liga MX opponent. New England Revolution are here. Cavalli AS in Haiti, that'll be their opponent. Rapids have Comunicaciones, Guatemala. And New York City FC, who earned their way in via MLS Cup, have Santos de Guapiles of Costa Rica. Look, you look at the bracket here. So Rapids and New York City FC would not face a Liga MX team until, at the very earliest, the semifinals. So it feels like they have the easiest path. You have Montreal off the bat, the only team with a Liga MX opponent, Santos Laguna. The Revs are in a little group here, a four-team group. And if they get through, they'll have either Saprissa or Pumas on the other side. The Sounders, if they get through Motagua, could have León on their side. And if Montreal beat Santos, they probably got Cruz Azul on that side. Unless the Canadian Premier League
just rolls here. Let's go forth, baby. Bobby Smear, Neotis. Get me Kwame Awuwa. Get me Emery Walshman. Get me that squad in there. Mo Babuli. Cruz Azul has no chance.
These are some class names.
Cruz Azul have no shot in this. Kyle Becker's going to pull the strings. He's going to get it done. Oh, my God.
Kyle Becker and Emery? That's a Toronto FC, double diff draft right there.
Yeah, it's Sigma FC. That's what that squad is. Maybe Kyle Larin comes in on loan just for the game. Maybe Richie does. Tejan. Get everyone in. No, but I'm very excited for Forge. Obviously, I think this is the toughest quadrant with that Montreal and Forge are both in. But if it's an all-Canadian quarterfinal, you better believe we're about to burn this show down, because that's all we're talking about for like five straight weeks on this show.
Can it happen? Make it happen, Canada. Get it done. That would also make the path a little easier for MLS teams. Again, they haven't won it. Who has the best path, in your opinion, Tom, and who should be putting the most into this?
I'd love to go against the grain and say CF Montreal, just because screw it, you could play four Liga MX teams and just really be the kings of CONCACAF and just put together a run that nobody will ever match, because it'll just be impossible to beat four Liga MX teams. The draw won't happen like that.
Are we bringing Eddie Sabrango back for this? Let's go. Sorry.
It's obviously NYCFC or Colorado, because they won't face either a Liga MX team or Seattle in the semifinals. As long as they get through that first round, one if they play each other in the quarterfinals, one MLS team, whoever gets through, would be into the semis against either likely Seattle or Lyon. I believe that's how the bracket is. If you are able to avoid some of those top teams to that long, that's definitely the easiest draw.
I would say the Rapids, because I think Comunicaciones is a easier first round matchup than Santos is for NYCFC. And then, as Tom said, you face potentially an MLS team, a little more familiarity, less travel there. And then whatever comes out of the Seattle-León portion. Now, I think León is the best Liga MX team in this competition based off the way the rosters look right now. And that makes it tough for all three of the MLS teams on that side of the bracket that you have to deal with them, even though it is the only Liga MX team in that group. So, as usual, I'm excited, and I will be let down and heartbroken at some point.
Jonathan Sanchez said he was going to take a break from hitting us up and then immediately tweeted us whether NYCFC will be serious contenders for CCL and Campeones Cup. I think, for Campeones Cup, man, it's one game. So they're definitely serious contenders there. How about CCL? There was a big argument in NYCFC Twitter going on this morning. Glenn Crooks and Rob Abramovich talking about how much they should put into this competition. My opinion is NYCFC should absolutely go for it, but I heard your little tease, Tom, about Tati. If he's there, they might be the favorite among MLS teams or close to it. If he's not, that changes. What are you hearing about Tati? Do you think he goes in this window? I mean, like, the Daily Mail, take that with a grain of salt, is reporting that that West Ham is monitoring him, and the number is at 20 million. And Pep Guardiola is quoted as saying, I think he's a guy who will do the next step in Europe. I know he has the quality, and I think he's ready to make the next step to Europe. We will see where. I mean, what's going to happen with Tati? Is this it for him with NYCFC? Help us out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything that to suggest anything's close, but just the fair assumption is to not expect him to be at a, that he's played his last game with NYCFC. And you know, the timing's right. He's been in the league for a few years. He's clearly taken the next step. He won the Golden Boot. He's clearly at the point where the next step in his career is to move to Europe, or let's say, you know, Palmeiras or somebody, one of the South American giants. Because again, you know, Palmeiras are still very, very interested in him. That interest has not gone away. They tried to sign him and Edward Atuesta last winter. They had a couple bids rejected from both of those clubs. They were trying to get Tati for like $5 million. But he signed a new contract at NYCFC. They're still very interested in him. Well, some of the numbers I heard was that maybe they were hoping for, you know, $8 or $9 million. And just kind of after the last couple months, he said, I can't possibly see the fee being that. I also would be surprised if the fee's $20 million. But hey, maybe they get in the, you know, drum up a bidding war between, say, Palmeiras and European clubs. But yeah, I would assume that Tati's not going to be there for that CCL run. But even if they don't sign anybody, which they will, obviously, they're going to put resources into this team as they have. Tyus Magno was a $9 million player that played a couple hundred minutes for them last year. Like, they have a ton of talent on this team. They still have a lot of players. Like, he came off the bench to score against Philly. Like, Philly, that would have been Philly's club record signing 3-4 times over. And he was just somebody who came off the bench against them because Tati Castellanos is suspended and Hebert, you know, ran his race as a starter. So that's just the kind of level of talent that this team can have, the way that they've used the U22 initiative to kind of deepen the roster, because those slots don't count acquisition costs. And that's how, you know, City Football Group can, you know, make the team a little bit stronger, a little bit deeper. So I'd have high expectations for what they're going to do with whatever resources they get. But again, I would not assume that Tati Castellanos is going to be back.
You know that I agree with Tom, that I think that if Tati's gone, which I believe he will be, because you sign a contract, you extend, you win a championship, you win the Golden Boot. That's the process, right? That's sort of what LAFC was trying to do with Eddie Atuesta and Diego Rossi, was here's the timeline and this is part of it. And Tati has hit that timeline. He mentioned Tyus Magno, Thiago Andrade, Hebert, who I've mentioned multiple times, when he's fit and healthy next year after coming back from that injury. Nicolas Acevedo didn't play at all in the playoffs, which means you have some flexibility to slide guys around. You can move Maxi out wide if you need to. You can change the formation, whatever it is. This NYCFC team will, I believe, hit the ground running. And that's one of the toughest things for CCL. Normally, and NYCFC was the biggest culprit of this last year, most of the signings aren't even done by the time the season starts for some of these clubs. And NYCFC has a fully loaded roster. You're hoping Anton Tinnerholm's healthy. If not, okay, that's a little bit of a hole that you have to deal with. Tavon Gray played phenomenally in the playoffs, but you hope that Anton Tinnerholm, the best right back in MLS, is back. Either way, this is a team that has their identity, will have their coach in place, and will have a ton of talent to be able to start CCL on the right foot. And as we've said, with their pathway, they could hit their peak in May and not have to face a Liga MX team until that point. And so that's where all the positivity comes from. And while it may hamper their ability to win Supporters Shield, I don't think it hampers their ability to win MLS Cup again, especially when you look at the way that they kind of tailed down in August this year and then peaked back towards the playoffs. That's something that you could do again next year. So this is a team that I think should focus on CCL and make it a priority.
I completely agree.
I agree with Gus completely. Yeah. Sorry, we missed somebody. My internet must be slow here. But yeah. To be fair, to offer kind of the other side of the argument, you know, we thought a lot of this about Columbus. Like, you could kind of just swap their name in for NYCFC last year, and they got off to a really slow start and a bunch of injuries that they never recovered from. And you know, sitting here, you'd assume that, yeah, like, they, if you really focus on CCL, you really hurt yourself in the Supporters Shield race, but, you know, you shouldn't have to worry about not making the playoffs. And that's what we all thought about Columbus. And you know, the run above the playoff line just never came, and they missed the playoffs. So I get where, I guess, the hesitation might be. But again, like, I don't see why you would get into this tournament that is champions of champions of the region, the prestige. Like, you just go for it.
I mean, look, they just became champions. They spent years grinding and, like, reconfiguring their way of competing and building on that model and moving through coaches that have progressed them, and then finally get it done to just ship CCL. Like, it makes no sense. Like, if you're an ambitious club, if you want to be considered a winner, if you want to progress from this point of winning MLS Cup off the 4 seed, which is an incredible accomplishment, you don't go into CCL and just pass on it. Like, if you don't think that your squad, and again, you're right, Columbus is they did it. This happened to them. We didn't think it would happen to them, and it did. If you don't think the squad you've built can do it, which I think is crazy given the spine that they have, the veterans that they have, the bevy of young talent they have, whether it be homegrown or international, the resources that they have, whether it be to sign players or just to discover and identify players via the City Football Group. If you don't think that you can do it, what are you doing? Like, what was the point of any of this? It's not that big of a lift. Like, if the Union with significantly less resources and worse attacking talent can do what they did and go to a semifinal and make the playoffs and almost get through to the conference final and make an incredible run, if they can do that and you don't think you can do that, again, what are you doing? Like, you're a champion now. Act like it.
And
go make history.
And I think the comparison to Columbus is a good one. Tom, the only difference is how much younger this group is. Right. And you look at Columbus, and I thought they were the deepest returning team we'd ever seen. I said all of that. But Harrison Awful, Jonathan Mensah, Arthur, all these guys are older than what you're talking about with this NYCFC group, and they're probably not as deep. They also lost Aiden Morris in a terrible injury. So it's tough. But you're playing those games anyway. Right? The question is, like, for that opening round, like, you don't have anything else going on. You need to put your best roster out there. Your best 11 out there to win. That's what we're talking about.
And look, they had a ton of guys on the bench this year that aren't starting, that are quality. Mm-hmm. Play those guys in MLS matches. Like, let Thiago Andrade go run at people on the weekend and go win your midweek. Like, build that way.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's look at the other teams and just give one thing that you're looking forward to for each of them. How about the Sounders? Dave, what's something for the Sounders and CCL that you're looking forward to?
Well, you have the possibility of playing the Jordan Morris, Leo Chu, Raul Diaz lineup for the first time ever. And, like, that's exciting. I think Jordan Morris, the return we saw at the end of the year, you're looking at a guy who's going to hit the ground running next year. And we saw last time he returned from injury, that second year was when he lit MLS on fire. And so that's a guy who can carry you in CCL. Maybe if Rui Diaz isn't in training camp the whole time because he's working on a contract, maybe Lodero's not fully healthy. They have enough weapons to be able to power them through at least an early round of CCL without having those guys available.
Sell me on the Revs in CCL. Tom, what are you looking forward to?
The formula is there with the top-end talent and the veteran experience at Bruce Arena as a coach. So I think that we haven't talked enough about them, probably because of the draw. Again, you know, if they were, you know, replace them with NYCFC or Colorado, I think that we'd be saying a lot of positive things about their potential run. But this team, you know, every time they have Carlos Hill and Gustavo Bo on the field, they have, you know, two of the best players on the field. Doesn't matter who they're playing in this region. Again, they have Bruce Arena with all of his winning and all of his experience. And, you know, the Sebastian Legette trade to go with a spine that includes Matt Pulser, Henry Kessler, Andrew Farrell. Like, there are just a lot of good ingredients for this team.
By the way, that Sebastian Legette trade just went final. We'll talk about here in a little bit. I don't think they're in a terrible bracket. I mean, Saprissa, MLS teams have handled in the past. MLS teams have been pretty good against Costa Rica on the whole with some outliers of late. And then Pumas is, that's not terrifying. That's not like, oh, we can't do this. You know, but MLS teams and right. CCL, we know the story there. I'm going to throw out the Rapids. We get Kellen Acosta in CCL, baby. He's been working toward this. He's ready for this. You got us against the world attitude in Colorado. So I'm really curious to see how they navigate this competition.
I think I said this last week, but what's obviously I'm a neutral MLS over everyone supporter. What is exciting for me about this CCL group is most of these teams are going to be heavily returning rosters. It is not new players figuring out a new system, new coaches. Like, you're looking at the Rapids, who will be very similar, Seattle, the Revs, NYCFC. And so I think they are closer to hitting the ground running in CCL than we've had most teams in the past. That's the sell for why it's going to happen this year. The reason it won't is because it's never happened before and it will never happen in my lifetime.
On that note, we'll keep it rolling off CCL. Let us know what you're looking forward to. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. All the schedule information at those two destinations.
You know Romel Quioto scoring a hat trick, right? Against Santa.
Like, yeah, Romel Quioto, he's the biggest star of this tournament. Yeah. Like,
book that. He doesn't
nobody's bigger than Romel, all right? Nobody. Let's talk news with Tom Bogert. And as if we haven't already. You want to do Charlotte's expansion draft first? We should give them a little shine, right?
Yeah.
All right, here's the draft. Mackenzie Gaines from Austin FC, who Miguel Angel Ramirez says is a winger, a pure winger. He says not a nine, he's a winger. Anton Walks from Atlanta United. He started 32 games for the Five Stripes last year. Joseph Mora from DC, a Costa Rican left back, 28, I think. Started around 20 games for DC last year. Then they took Tristan Blackman of LAFC. They flipped him to Vancouver for $475,000 of general allocation money. And then they grabbed Ismail Tajiri-Shradi from New York City FC. Cut those celebrations short. He's going to LAFC for $400,000 in general allocation money.
If someone shows up to the season opener in a Charlotte FC Tajiri-Shradi jersey, I will love you for the rest of time.
That would be a good jersey. Shout out. Look, I can't tell you we'll pay for it, but we will definitely retweet it.
I almost said that. I was like, nah.
Yeah. Nah, we'll definitely retweet it. Look, but that's $875,000 in GAM, Tom. And they have expenses here. They just spent $500,000 on international roster spots. I am not overwhelmed with the players that they chose and are keeping. I think Anton Walks is a really good draft pick. He's 24. He can play multiple positions. Center back, could play right back, has a lot of experience in the league. I'm not sure, but I think he's an international still.
He is an international.
That's so if you could get him a green card, that would be much better.
No, he has a green card.
Does okay. he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got it before the 2020 season.
I just retweet Tom, so I'm trusting Tom on this one. That's an important note on that. Joseph Mora, he does have a green card, will not be international. Left back, has some experience in the league. Not super wowed on that one as well. And Mackenzie Gaines showed some potential in Austin, but just that, in 8 games or so. What do you think of this draft for Charlotte in comparison to previous, but also in the, you know, in the time frame of them building their first ever roster?
I'm still going to commit to the bit that you guys already did that I was planning on doing. Just say kind of end of an era, Tristan Blackman, Ismail Tajiri-Shradi, Charlotte FC legends, ground up, day one guys. That's going to be tough for the locker room to recover from. But yeah, look, I think that you hit it on Walks. Walks is their best pick as far as the players that they kept. I think that was really smart. He's, as you said, he's somebody who's versatile with a green card, helps a lot, not expensive. I see him as a center back in this system. I don't see him as the kind of right back in Miguel Ramirez's kind of super all action, high energy, as he refers to, very complex game model. But yeah, there is a real argument to be made, though, that the two best players they drafted, they traded with Tristan Blackman and Ismail Tajiri-Shradi. Personally, I would have kept Blackman. He was kind of the first name that I saw on the list of players available, and he, you know, probably would have made the most sense. I think that he fits really well with Vancouver as a right-sided center back in a back three, though, to be fair. So I don't know. I still think they should have kept him given his, the way he was able to play in space, defend in space, everything that he did with LAFC, I can't imagine is going to be all that different from what Charlotte are going to play. And Tajiri-Shradi, same thing, but I feel less strongly about, you know, they got good value for both these players. So not to stay with the negatives, I think that at least that they did not sell these players or trade these players, rather, you know, below value. They got everything that they realistically could have it, and then some. I think that they did a really good job at that. But at some point, it doesn't matter how much allocation money you have if you don't have the players, but the defense is coming along well, so I'll give them a pass, and you know, let's see where the rest of the roster goes. Mackenzie Gaines is interesting. Miguel Ramirez was talking, gushing about how electric he was, and that he watched his debut in person. He was at that Austin game, and he was, you know, blown away by just, you know, his athleticism and the dynamism that he could bring. At first, I didn't necessarily love it because I was under the impression that he had to be on a senior roster slot for the whole season. But in reading through these very deep and very intricate MLS rules, he has to be a senior roster spot until roster compliance day, which is, you know, a day or two before the season starts. And then after that, they can move him down to the supplementary roster. And Charlotte are not going to fill all 30 spots of their roster before opening day. They're keeping flexibility. They want to make sure that they can make changes as they see fit as the season goes on. So he's technically going to be a senior roster guy for right now. And then I would be shocked if a day after roster compliance, they don't move him to supplementary. So I like that pick a lot more than I did when it happened. Joseph Mora, again, personally, I don't see big value in drafting, using an expansion draft slot on somebody that you could have gotten. I forget if he's re-entry draft or if he's free agency, whatever he'd be. But DC declined his option. And I just think that, you know, they probably could have used that spot on a player who was under contract and they wouldn't have to worry about it. We wouldn't have to worry about a potential Joe Corona situation here. But, you know, if he becomes their starting left back that plays 25 to 30 games and he's fine, you know, we won't remember that he was out of contract. So all in all, I think that they did a little bit of what I expected. I expected them to at least make a couple trades. Again, I wouldn't have been surprised if they didn't do more, just based on the way that everything I've heard and everything that I kind of understand about their vision, their theories, and everything. So I, all in all, I think it was a pretty good draft. I don't think that we're going to be looking back at it like Austin's or Cincy's in like just, you know, what happened here. I think that it was a good, not great draft.
Yeah, I would say it's above average draft. I mean, just off the allocation money incoming, I don't remember an expansion draft, and I did all the research as I hosted these over the years and looked at it. I don't think there's anybody who's done that well as far as allocation gain.
Definitely not.
I do want you to dig in a little more for me on what their roster building theory or strategy is, because every time I hear anybody from the club talk about it, it sounds very international focused. For one, their roster right now is very international focused. They didn't go get in this draft, and they might not have had the opportunity to, and free agency is open now too, and that's an avenue. Sort of the bedrock MLS experience guys that we've seen successful expansion teams of the past have, whether that be like a Dax in Nashville or a Walker, or as a more high end one, although they got 875 in allocation, so you could go get a big guy.
Which, by the way, I think is a big part of this, is those guys aren't available in expansion draft. But when you look at the numbers that Godoy, Dax, and Walker Zimmerman went to Nashville, you're sort of in that realm of Walker a little bit more, but that money you could potentially flip for one of those guys. And I think one of those is better than bringing a few guys in, bringing a Josh Williams in an expansion draft and guys like that who maybe aren't starters on your team, and you're sort of wasting those spots versus getting that allocation and being able to bring in one of these guys if they become available over the next 2 months.
It feels like they have a focus on the international, Tom. Is that right? And how do they then sort of fill in the other side of it, which is history tells you you need MLS experience to navigate an expansion season and be successful?
Yeah, the juxtaposition for this team here is, on one end, as you say, the MLS experience is key, and I'd be surprised. I don't see them making a Walker Zimmerman type trade, but I'd be surprised if, the Nick Lima, the Anibal Godoy, kind of that like 400 to 600 or 700 thousand range, if they can find kind of a trade partner who aren't going to say, you guys have extra allocation money, we're not accepting anything less than 800,000 or whatever, and, try to walk away. But the juxtaposition for this team is that their strength in their infrastructure in, taking away outside of, we'll point to all the money that owner David Tepper has and all the things that he said about spending big. Their big infrastructure is their scouting department. They got that scouting department up deep and vast almost immediately. They have a ton of smart people. They have a ton of people with eclectic backgrounds. They have networks all over the world. And like just looking at their first 8 signings or whatever it was, they signed, or even just going back when they signed Riley McGree, I think that was either right after Sergio Ruiz or right after somebody else. They did 2 transfers in 48 hours that included like 3 different continents. Like this is where this team's strengths are. So that's why they spent premium dollar to get a couple more international slots from Nashville. That's why they focused mostly on domestic guys here. That's probably why that they tried to use some of the value to get some allocation money back already, because they're going to need to pay down acquisition fees, and they're going to need to maybe buy another international slot. Depends on kind of what their vibe is. But right now, the spine is something that they've used the word spine probably a million times in talking about the roster build. And true to form, like that central midfield trio of Jordi Alcavar, Sergio Ruiz, and Riley McGree, like that looks really strong in theory. Like that, like you can talk yourself into a lot of things in this league. And so that's why I keep on hedging with it looks like it's going to be really good. But those 3 players seem like they complement each other well. And individually, they seem like 3 good players. Like I've already reported that 6 or 8 Spanish teams were calling it and trying to get Charlotte to transfer Sergio Ruiz before, his loan ended here. Like, they rejected a couple offers. Birmingham City are desperate to keep Riley McGree. And everything I've heard is that Charlotte just aren't budging. They're not listening. Like, we acquired him for a reason. We want to see him in Charlotte. And we think that when he gets here, his value is going to keep going up anyway. So I think that that's really the kind of, strength of this team, is that midfield trio. And again, they have one U22 initiative slot being used on Vinicius Melo. Shout out Melo, because my dog's named Melo, so I'm rooting for him. And they have 3 open DP spots. Jordi Alcavar would be eligible for young DP. So maybe if they need to do a little cap maneuvering and like hold a DP spot for the summer, they could do that temporarily. But the idea is 3 more DPs and 2 more U22 initiative slots. And going back to the deep pockets and all of the ambition that Dave Tepper has talked about, that's 5 slots where you don't need to worry about acquisition costs when it comes to the salary cap and the budget. That is huge. And with their infrastructure of the scouting department and all of the networks that Zoran Crneta, Miguel Ramirez, Thomas Schalling, all these guys, like, they are going to find some targets. Like, when I look at, like, kind of scouting departments, you talk about City Football Group or Red Bull Global or LAFC with their ties in South America, like Vancouver with what they've built since Axel Schuster got there. Like, Charlotte's going to be right up there, and I have really high expectations for the kind of players they're going to find.
Give me an idea on the DP side. What do you think that profile looks like for this team?
I wish I had an idea, man. And I wish I could tell you that it's going to be $10 or $12 million transfer fees. But while the money is going to be there, I'd imagine, I'm not sure that that's kind of the MO of the front office. I don't – if they brought somebody in for $10 million or more, their expectation would be like the Carlos Vela MVP season. Like, they talk about value a lot. They don't seem like a team that's going to be – you know, really, like, somebody, and not to, you know, say anything bad about Brenner, but Brenner wasn't a proven commodity, and he was bought for $12 or $13 million by Cincy. I don't really see Charlotte doing that, but I think that they're going to have God.
No, so I agree with you. I would add to that. I think when you talk about value in DPs and you look at Miguel Angel Ramirez's background, you're talking about Sao Paulo and Gregory, right? You're talking about proving commodity guys from leagues or teams where you see weaknesses, whether it's a team in Brazil that just got relegated, whether it's a team that's having trouble, Argentina, Ecuador. And you look at players in this league that are DPs. Jimmy Chara probably goes in that category as well, of like, you can find $5 to $10 million players who are ready to win now in their prime, but are not Brenners who you might sell for $20 million down the road, and are not Velas who are at the end of their career but on high money. And we've seen that be successful. But I think, to me, that's where I look at Charlotte and say, can they get a Gregory or a player like that who's ready to play now and probably is a cornerstone for the next few years?
I will just say, you only get 8 international roster spots. They have now traded up to have 10. You have to fill your roster with non-internationals. So it's great to be eclectic, and I agree. Like, a lot of these signings are starting to pay off and sort of, hey, we signed him early, and now it's, you know, the value is rising. They're performing better. Magri's a great example. I think Alcivar is going to turn out to be a good signing. Obviously, mm-hmm. Ramirez knows him well from Ecuador. But you still got to, as you said earlier, you still got to build out the whole roster. So I'm very curious to see how they do that on the other side and fill those domestic roster spots. They do have the number one overall draft pick in the Super Draft. So you'd think you could get something there, at least somebody who can, you know, I'm not saying Daryl DK because that doesn't exist in every draft, but something to help you on that side. But they're going to have to figure it out. Like, it's bigger than just international shopping.
Yeah, and the interest didn't, you know, progress to any serious talks or anything. But you know, I do know one of the guys that they've at least thought about or liked if the price was right, like Sebastian Legette or Paul Ariola, like guys like I do know that they are looking at, like, they're not completely disregarding this. And I think that I've heard some of that too, maybe in part because they want to, like, they have this international profile, but they were also pretty deliberate. And like, I was told multiple times that the sporting director Zoran Corneta and head coach Miguel Ramirez have, and one of the assistant coach arrived first, it's escaping me which one it was, that they have seen every single team in MLS play live. Like, they were going out of the way to make sure, look, like, we promise that we're not overlooking this league. Like, while we talk about our scouting department and networks and everything, we do understand the value of MLS experience. And again, well, how much they understand that or how much they value that, so far there's a lot of international flavor, but they have at least been looking around. And again, as long as they, what's going to really hamper that is that, and Zoran Corneta has even said this on the record, like, yeah, like, I get it why teams are jacking up the prices, because they know we have more money and spots to fill. He's like, I'd do it too if I was them, so I don't blame them. But like, there are a lot of trade offers where, or trade talks that end very quickly because we are way far off on our valuations of this player. Like, we'll move on to our next target.
And those could come a little bit, those bands get a little narrower as there's some pressure and some time and things like that. So we'll see what happens with Charlotte FC. But got some good assets here. They moved on in the expansion draft and a couple players that they like too as well. So
can I just say, I think from here, I don't think we know a ton. It feels like it may not hit early, right? Like, this might be the type of team similar to what we saw with Austin, of like, Druisi was done in the summer. Like, it feels like this is a mm-hmm. group that the best roster they have will not be on opening day. It'll be over the course of this season. And not that this year will be a dry run in any way, but Charlotte FC might be the better group in 2023, which I don't think is the wrong way to build, because you learn things as you go along.
All right. Let us know.
Sorry, real quick. Goss, you're 100% right. They talk about flexibility. They talk about not locking themselves in. And this is something that Nashville did. This is something that Austin did. They deliberately held the DP spot open for the summer. They were very deliberate about that because we want to see what this looks like. We want to see where we most need this. We don't want to lock ourselves into something and, like, it looks good on paper and then we suck when we get on the field. So I don't know if Charlotte's going to hold the DP spot or not, but they are definitely going to retain flexibility for the summer.
That's how I describe ETR. It looks good on paper, sucks when we get on the field.
Well, yeah, warm-ups are always great. Yeah, pre-show meeting is always on fire. All right, let's talk free agents. We're just going to keep ticking away all these news items. Free agency is open. There are more free agents than ever before because the band has widened as far as who is eligible on that. Let's start with the big names. There are three number 10s around the league that are free agents. You have Sebastian Blanco, you have Maxi Morales, and you have Albert Rusnak. The first two, Tom, again, this goes back to me just retweeting you all winter long. Those look close, right? Our expectation is that Blanco and Maxi are back with their teams. And the way free agency works, for DPs at least, your current team can give you more money than anybody else. Other clubs have a limit on the amount of raise that they can give you. So for Blanco, for Morales, one, they can make more money with their current teams. Two, they're in great situations. They just played an MLS Cup. They are the leaders of those squads. And three, I expect to get those done based on what you have said, which is that you expect them to get those done. Any wrinkles there, or are we basically spot on with those and we can talk Rusnak?
Yeah, you're spot on, but just to add like a little nuance and context, it just both players and both clubs are extremely interested in getting deals done. And that's why the overriding feeling is that deals will get done. But it's just about finding the right number. They are each in their mid-30s and, you know, a ton of miles, you know, still very high-quality players, as they showed. But, you know, Portland kind of held a hard line with Diego Valeri and signed him to a Max Tam deal. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, say, with Blanco and Morales in their situations, or if maybe it'll be a deal that's structured in a way that maybe year one you're a DP and then you can be bought down, or maybe it's more of a rolling contract, one plus one, something like that. But it's the number is something that obviously both clubs would prefer, like any other club, to keep DP spots open. But we'll see kind of where those negotiations land. I have not asked around about this for about a week, but as of pre-MLS Cup, neither of those deals were 100% done. But again, these are the overriding expectation is that they're going to return.
And Dave, I got to imagine there's a lot of teams thinking, they could use Albert Rusnak. No acquisition costs on this, like a 10-10 player.
All three. I get that the other two won't happen. The Colorado Rapids should be putting in an offer on all three at the max they can. Like a fully established team that's like, if we don't get them, we're fine. But if we do, we don't have to pay a transfer fee and we get a DP. And you're right. Rusnak's the number one because he's in his prime. He put up 11 goals, 11 assists last year. You can play him out wide. You can play him in the middle. He is not Nico Ladero. He is not Sebastian Blanco, right? He is not a guy who is going to carry a team. But for any team that's already competitive and doesn't want to go out and spend the transfer fee outside of MLS to bring a player in, you have a guy who can hit the ground running because he's been in this league for so long that you can go and get. There should be five or six teams that are at Rusnak's door the moment that this starts. They should have NBA tickets ready for sideline. Because that's how Toronto got Drew Moore like 10 years ago, the first time we ever did this. And we were like, whoa, free agency, it's exciting. And he just makes a ton of sense. The Rapids are the number one because they have so many pieces where if you have to wait, if you have to negotiate, they don't really need to know what's going to happen with him to affect the rest of their roster. And they can win without him because they were the number one team in the Western Conference this year. But if they could get him and you take him from RSL, which would be huge for them, that takes them to that level where maybe he is a guy who in one big game can win it for you. Maybe he was the guy, and I know he didn't do it for RSL, so it seems tough to say, that would have gotten you over the Portland Timbers at home and gotten you a second goal. And it just seems like a no-brainer.
And meanwhile, RSL should be sitting on Albert Rusnak's porch with a flamethrower waiting for any team to try to approach that door.
You shall not pass.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, you got to come through this if you want to get to Albert. Look. He is, in a lot of ways, between him and Demir and some others, like the heart and soul of this squad at this point. You know, he's been there 5 years. For them, just as any other team, no acquisition costs. You know what you're getting. He played 34 games for you, and I know there were some issues in the playoffs with health and safety protocol, but he played 34. You're not in the playoffs without Albert Rusnak and his 11-11, even in a season when he started slow from a protection standpoint. Like, you're not going to go out RSL without an owner right now and go spend to get a replacement for Albert Rusnak. You just need to keep Albert Rusnak. So we'll see what happens there.
I think Nashville should be talking to him as well for, again, another team where they sort of know where all their pieces lie, so they can spend some time negotiating. But again, you don't have to pay that transfer fee to bring him in.
They got $1 million in GAM too, but they don't even need it. It's a free agent.
Like, yeah, and it fits with all the pieces that they have. So I think that one makes sense. So those are two teams that pop out to me that, like, they should be there. San Jose, because, like, what's San Jose doing otherwise? And there's talent there, and you know that.
Bro, Chofis is coming back. He's got six more months on that loan.
Orlando's another one. I don't know that he fits Pareja's system perfectly, but Nani's gone. I thought Pereira, you really saw the drop-off this season. And with Rusnak, again, he could be your 10. He could play on the wing. He's sort of flexible, so you can still build other pieces in. So those are mine.
There should be interest in Albert Rusnak. Very interesting to start to see free agency turnover and have players of this quality be available. Outside that DP threshold, though, basically under the max budget charge, which is somewhere in the 600s, I believe. Right, Tom? You can basically, any team can sign you for whatever. There's no like, oh, I can get more money from my team right now. Any team can sign you to any number they want up to that max budget charge. So right now it seems like Sean Davis, who played every single minute of the year for the Red Bulls, he's a hot commodity. We've got Sam Stachko reporting Nashville, Vancouver, and Orlando are interested. There's transfer markets. Manuel Veth is saying that there are teams from outside MLS that are interested in 28-year-old Sean Davis. Red Bulls fans are curious. They're asking us in my Twitter mentions, what should Red Bull do with Sean Davis? What if we lose another captain? Is he staying in the league or going overseas? Tom, what do you think about the Sean Davis situation right now?
Yeah,
and will we ever use the phrase Sean Davis situation ever again?
I believe that the Red Bulls can offer him more than any other team. I think any other team can offer him around that max, and I believe the Red Bulls can go a little bit higher. 99% sure about that. But anyway, and this won't be helpful as far as what the Red Bulls should do. This isn't helpful. The Red Bulls should have signed him to a contract extension last year.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure why you look at him and you don't try to lock him up for life. He's a very good player, first and foremost. I don't want to talk about everything he brings off the field before, you know, mentioning that he's a good player. He fits the system. He's through the New York Red Bulls through and through. But, he's integral to that locker room. He's a captain. I have not heard one single bad word about him. He works hard. He's always available. And you have a team where it's a rotating door with this team, that they have made a lot of moves, and there aren't a lot of core guys that stick around for very long. Sean Davis is somebody who keeps that locker room, keeps that culture. If you need to have a couple pillars that remain while things change, and to help what they've done to have all this success over the last 10 or 11 years for the playoff streak, this is the kind of guy that is integral to that. And that's not to say that they can't make the playoffs without him, but I'm just not sure why this wasn't priority number one or priority one of the top ones last year to re-sign him to a deal. And who knows what the negotiations were, who knows what he was asking for, but I just think that this situation could and should have been avoided.
Yeah, I agree with Tom. And especially when you're bringing in guys like Drew Yearwood and Christian Casares, who are young foreign players, have a guy who knows this league, who knows the club, who knows the region, to help them along that step. And that's something we talk about all the time with young players, is like, you cannot roll out 11, 20-year-olds and have them get smoked every game and say that this is a positive step for the future. They need experience, and Sean Davis is that guy. He has a ton of value to other MLS teams. He is a minute-eater domestic player. If you bring him into your roster, you're getting 30 games out of him. You know he could do it at a high level. He's not a best 11. He's not really pushing an all-star, but he can fit along other types of players, right? You could put him next to a destroying six and he could sort of be on the ball a little bit more in advance, or you could put him next to an eight and he could be the guy who sits and covers. So the rumors that we're hearing, Nashville, I think we talked about it last week or on the last show, Weeby, of one of their priorities should be, what's the future behind Dax? What's the future behind Godoy? And I like Anungano. I think he's a good player, but Sean Davis is a step higher. And can he help you split minutes with those guys? You assume Godoy has a ton of national team stuff as well this year, because it looks like Panama is going to qualify for the World Cup. If they do, it's also an intercontinental playoff. So is he flying to New Zealand and then coming back? That all of that allows you to get Sean Davis a ton of minutes. If it is Nashville, it'd be surprising to see him go overseas, but this is one of the changes, right? Chris Durkin is a European player. Like, that qualifier has changed for MLS players. There is multiple overseas situations that he could potentially step into, but he probably has more value to MLS teams because of his domestic debt.
Like a New Jersey guy, so you understand why Red Bulls is probably where he would like to stay, at least on the personal side of things. Mm-hmm. But he's also a Duke guy. Charlotte's coming up. We just talked about how they need experience, and he would be a nice midfield piece if Miguel Angel Ramirez wants to play sort of a high-energy action game. Like, Sean Davis knows how that goes. And, oh, by the way, Mike Jacobs is a Duke guy. Talking about that Nashville link, I'm just throwing it out there. Some other news. Yeah, exactly. Some other news. I hear Sasha Kljestan. I think he's the first free agent we've seen sign. He re-signed with the Galaxy for his G's. Throw it up. Sasha Kljestan coming in as a substitute, banging in PKs. Still rolling along, coaching the youth as well. Looks like Kellen Rowe will return to Seattle. Again, he's got a tattoo of the skyline on his arm, so that's not a huge surprise as well. He ate up a lot of minutes and was a quality player for them last year. Shane O'Neill is one I think they would probably like to bring back, but his salary cap number was like in the low hundreds. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to get a raise, and a lot of teams are going to be interested because that relative raise is still very good value for them. So right now, Toronto and Atlanta have been linked with Shane O'Neill. Both make sense. Gonzalo Pineda knows him well. In Atlanta and Toronto, they need center back help. We talked about this all year long. He's in the prime of his career, 28, and he started, I think, 19 games last year for a very good Sounders team. So I expect him to have some interest. Any other names, Dave, that you want to throw out there?
Well, sorry, I was actually on the Shane O'Neill thing. I know this isn't like for like because he's a free agent and we're talking about trade, but $500,000 in allocation for Tristan Blackman is a surprising number. Kamal Miller was 350, I think, last year, and Kamal Miller
325,
and he wasn't at the time, but he is now a Canadian. Oh, 225.
That's yeah, that was really bad value for Olsen.
Yeah, so it is showing you the value of a domestic center back. I think that's what you're seeing from Tristan Blackman, and using his contract as well. And so think about that in terms of how much you give up for Shane O'Neill, because the flip might be how much you have to trade to get a center back from another team if that's not the guy. If Atlanta needs to go and find someone that's on a roster, that's where maybe $200,000 increase for Shane O'Neill makes sense instead of trying to trade for a center back and then give them a contract from another team. Stephen Cleveland, another Seattle guy, he showed he's a starter in this league, and what we've seen from Tyler Miller and Joe Willis and Brad Stuver is, one, there are a number of goalkeepers in this league who are ready to step up to being a starter. And then two, Kenneth Vermeer and Titon showed you on the other side, there's not a ton of value in the international market for goalkeepers. And so you'd assume there's a bit of a bidding war for him. Charlotte makes a ton of sense because they don't. Cisniega, I thought, was a good pickup for them. He can start 10 games and it's not going to hurt you, but you want to get a starter out of him. The other one that's interesting is Chicago. Gabriel Slolina will be the starter. Do you want to upgrade the backup spot, though, and spend money because Slolina is so cheap? Or, as Tom's shaking his head, no, do you take that deal of a homegrown on a goalkeeper and spend the money elsewhere? Which I don't disagree with. So I think those are some of the names that pop out to me.
Raheem Edwards is going to jump out to me. Bob Bradley leaned on him the last half of last year. Bob Bradley's back in Toronto. Raheem Edwards started in Toronto. That's his home. I would be surprised if that didn't work out, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Justin Miram is a free agent. Justin Miram is like the modern-day El Seno, I feel like. Two goals and six assists and about 1,500 last year, and when he got on the field for RSL in those late-game leverage situations, it's just like find his feet and see if he can make something happen. If you're a team looking for an impact off the bench and a spot starter, Justin Miram's a decent one at the wing or otherwise. Dom Baji, I would expect him to be back with Colorado. It would be shocking to me if he wasn't. It just feels like that's where he belongs. But when he's on the field, man, he scores goals outside of Nashville. That's been really the only place where he hasn't scored. And then Steve Clark is a free agent too, and I know he had a tough moment in MLS Cup, but the XG models love Steve Clark.
Also,
so if you're
that was
the vibe
not,
models love that, Steve Clark too. Just he's all over the place.
That was it. Not his fault on that goal.
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
No, I'm saying it's just a tough moment. I just said it was a tough moment. That's all.
Sean Johnson also gave up a goal. It was a tough moment for him, and he won MVP.
A lot of tough moments out there. A lot of tough moments.
Can I throw one out that
sure.
life?
I don't know what the value will be on this, but if you are looking for an MLS starting center back, you could do worse than Frédéric Briant. And he's over 30, and he made about $300,000 last year. It's not a home run signing, but there are teams who are desperate. And when you look at what Kiki Struna made last year and what Cincinnati rolled out at center back and all the other things around this league, you could get worse value. We're like smoking people over here.
All right, there's our free. That's a free agency roundup for you. So go check. Like, pay attention. You know, you'll see Tom and Paul and Sam and Jeff Carlisle and all those guys breaking all this news, and I'll make sure to retweet it for you right into your feed. So you just consider me the clearinghouse on all off-season news. Let's hit some odds and ends. Speaking of FC Cincinnati, they're trying to go worst to first in terms of home results, says Pat Noonan, which is absolutely what he should say. He's the new head coach, and he was announced and revealed. They got to find a way to win home games if they want to climb that table at all. What do you know? What do you think about this Pat Noonan signing, Tom?
First of all, Cincinnati need to focus on having the most wins at their stadium. They are still tied for first with about seven or eight other teams, so that'll be a good start, and you just build from there, and you try to get the first. But yeah, I think that's a really good hire by Cincy. I think Pat Noonan was, you know, made a ton of sense. He was interviewed by all teams, pretty much, I think, that had a vacancy other than maybe Toronto, just because the Bob thing was in the works, or the Bob thing was so quickly done. But yeah, they did take a swing at Jim Gurton. From what I was told, there was zero chance of that happening from the Philadelphia side. They were not going to entertain an offer. They were not going to listen to anything. That was something that they were cognizant of and deliberate about when Cincinnati GM Chris Albright went to Cincinnati, was that, okay, we're not gonna let this happen under anything. Jim Curtin wasn't pushing to leave either, but there was, you know, even just out of a matter of principle, there was no amount of money that was going to get Jim Curtin out of his contract to get to FC Cincinnati.
Jim Curtin's response to FC Cincinnati was, go Birds. Philly, baby. That's all he had to say, and he was done. But it makes a ton of sense for Cincinnati. I think the biggest thing you look at is Chris Albright has to basically restructure a club, and so trust is huge. And so for him to have a coach who sees the game the way he does, who sees his system the way Chris Albright's going to start bringing in talent, and I think has the same idea of the way to win in this league, it just makes too much sense because of all the other things Chris Albright has to do. He has to build out the academy. He has to build out the scouting network. He has to restructure the roster from some of the international talent they've had, from the lack of MLS talent they have. All these things he has to work on. So to have a little bit of a blind spot where you know what you're getting from the coach, even though he's a first-time coach, you at least know his personality. You guys know the way you see things. That's huge for Chris Albright. I think it's why he was willing to push for Jim Curtin, and he was going to take that risk because the whatever resources they were going to give up for it was going to be worth it. And Pat Noonan kind of falls into that same thing. For Pat Noonan, no loss situation. If he's the worst team in the league, he's not worse. So all he can do is go up from here.
I mean, look, just
life's all about managing expectations, guys.
Exactly. Just having a coach for two straight years, that's a big win.
One straight year.
That's a big win for FC Cincinnati. Like, just a little bit of consistency. Like, they got the fans. They got the stadium. They've got the investment in the squad, though you can argue about the efficiency of that. And certainly we have argued about that a lot. But having just some semblance of consistency should push them forward in a good way. Let's talk the Sebastian Legette trade.
Can I just say real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Lucho Acosta was fantastic this year.
Yes.
Everything we've heard is Chris Albright wants Pat Noonan to play a similar style to what Philly played. How does he fit into that is going to be really interesting to watch.
I'm fascinated by FC Cincinnati. We'll see. I'll be back for a march soon, Cincy folks. Jeff Carlisle, Tom, you had this first. You didn't have the details, I guess, but you had it first that Sebastian Legette was going to the Revs. Now those details are out. It's official. $1.3 million in GAM. It's a little bit misleading, maybe you could say, because it's $300K in GAM in 22, $223K. We're seeing a lot of these trades split it over multiple years. And then it's $800,000 GAM in incentives. Look, now you have a midfield of Polster. You assume Polster, Legette, and Carlos Heel. Maybe Polster could play on the wing a little bit if you don't have an exact replica for Tejon.
He's the six.
Oh. Legette's the six?
No, you said Polster would play on the wing.
Polster.
Oh, no, I'm saying Legette could play on the wing.
You said Paul.
Oh.
My bad. No. What do you think of the trade, Dave? What do you think? Legette to the Revs.
The big thing to me with Sebastian Legette is his flexibility. He can be a winger in this league, and he can be an eight in this league or a 10 if you really need him in a pinch. And so for any team bringing him in, that's like the number one is, well, he can fit with everyone. And then you add in the success he's had, the quality he has. I think what he meant for the LA Galaxy locker room in some tough moments, and obviously with the Revs, he has experience with Bruce Arena. And so it just feels like you're losing Tejon. Sebastian Legette doesn't give you the attacking explosiveness that Tejon Buchanan gives you. But if Trastison hits, great. If he doesn't, Legette can play out there. If he does, then you can play Legette farther central. If you want to limit Carlos Heels, maybe minutes over the course of the year to keep him fresh, or you're worried about injuries that he's had over the last few years, he can also fill in there. So that's the appeal with Legette. And it just makes sense for a Revs team that's sort of in a win now mode to not push the can down on replacing Tajon or using that money. Use it now for a guy who can help you now.
Yeah, also, it seems like his best attribute, and I'm thinking a lot with the U.S. national team in this sense, is to retain the ball and to get the ball to players who can make plays in space. If he can be that guy in the midfield for the Revs and find Carlos Heel in areas where Carlos Heel can make a difference, that's going to be a really successful partnership there. And we know Bruce Arena loves to go back to his past and say, hey, I trusted this guy. I like this guy. I want this guy on my team. He's going to make a difference for me. MLS veteran, TID. Still, I'm curious what those incentives are on the 800K, but we shall see. By the way, Dewan Jones sticking around. He had been a subject of some overseas interest, apparently. 3-year extension for Dewan Jones, one of the best left backs in the league. I think certainly the best young left back in MLS at this point. And I want to ask you this, Tom. Do you think we'll see Adam Buksa with the Revs next year?
I don't think so. I think that the interest is going to be too strong, and I don't see the Revs kind of white knuckling, holding on to him, and, you know, desperately trying to just say no to everything. I think that it's just the right timing for player and club, and I think the right offers are going to come. And as long as the right offers do come, I see him going back to Europe. But kind of sticking with the Revs, just like that midfield trio, that concept of, so if Buksa leaves, then Gustavo Bo can go up top, and then that unlocks you to play, you know, one center forward formations again, and while being able to get all of your best players on the field. So if they sign another winger, like you said, if Trostesen hits like a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, whatever you want to call it, that has Matt Pulser as a 6, Sebastian Legette as the 8, and Carlos Heel as a 10, is among the strongest groups in the league. And I think that trade is, you know, he's going to be a really good player for them. I think that Legette, like, we can squabble about the value. I think that the $500,000 guaranteed would be too cheap, but the $1.3 million, if it hits incentives, might be a little too expensive. So there's a lot of legwork that's going in the $800,000 incentives. I don't know what went into it, but just to be annoyingly personal, to make a joke about this, this scoop came from, I was driving, and that's when I started hearing about the deals done. And I pulled over to a rest stop on the New Jersey Parkway, and that's, you know, just, that's where my life is. And that's, you know, that's what you deserve. That's what I deserve. Just big time sitting in a parking spot at a rest stop, looking at, I don't know, like a Dunkin' Donuts through the window, being like, this is nice. Okay.
Was it the Molly Pitcher rest stop? Because that's one of my go-tos on the way from New York.
It's in Central New Jersey. Shout out Central New Jersey.
Okay, that's a top I-95 rest stop. Weaves, you into this?
Just know that if you call or text Tom Bogert about news, he will stop everything he's doing to make sure that he is on top of that scoop.
So
he will stop everything.
So you assume, by the way, one of the incentives in the $800,000 is winning MLS Cup. And if they win MLS Cup, they won't care what it costs at that point. So that's always a positive.
It will be worth it. Here's some other news notes around MLS right now. Dylan Nealis from Nashville to the Red Bulls to join his brother, Sean Nealis, for $125,000. That could rise to $200,000, baby. Let's go. Both Nealis is on one team. You have a right back and a center back. Put them together. He's the number 3 overall draft pick in that first super draft for Inter Miami. Didn't work out for him in Miami. Didn't work out for a lot of people in Miami. Didn't work out for him in Nashville. They had options that they preferred at that right back position, but this seems like a good opportunity with Kyle Duncan moving on to fill a hole that the Red Bulls had. So I think that's a good trade. It's a solid trade for the Red Bulls. Paul Areola linked with the Galaxy. Originally, this was put out by Roger Gonzalez at CBS. And Michele Giannone, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Michele. But Michele.
He's been one of the Portland legend. Shout out.
He's been one of the best Twitter follows that I've found in the last 6 months. And he and Nico Cantor do an awesome podcast, U.S. Football Pod. And by the way, Paul Areola came on the U.S. Football Pod and said that LA Galaxy has already approached his agent about a potential deal, but at the moment there's not been any formal offer presented to DC United. We've talked about how maybe Paul Areola is a guy that he has a ton of quality, obviously, and, you know, international chops and all this experience, that if you're DC, maybe you would be willing to move on from, because you have Julian Gressel and he's on a DP deal. Maybe you clear that salary out and go somewhere else. What do you think, Dave?
I think this would be a deal that made sense for all three parties involved. Paul Areola is obviously a Southern California guy. He was in the Galaxy Academy 5,000 years ago for 7 seconds, but it's going home for him. We know Greg Vanney loves wingers that he can get in isolated spots that will get to the end line and pull balls back for Chicharito or whoever it is. So it makes sense from a system setup, and feels like Cabral is going to take a little while. And so Paul Arriola can give you production now, maybe fill a role that Sebastian Legette did in your locker room in place of him. And for DC United, as you mentioned, they got Julian Gressel. They're very similar pieces. And in the system that they played, Paul Arriola, to his credit, played really well when he came back from injury for this group. And he was flexible and he covered a ton of ground across the field. And I was impressed by the way he played inside rather than needing the ball out wide to create chances and be more effective, be a second runner at times in the box, score some goals. But it just feels like the type of move where if DC can move him on and bring someone in who fits better into the new system, which was obviously set up after Paul Arriola, it just works for all three parties.
Got thoughts, Tom?
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. Obviously, that Paul's already kind of talked about on the record, but you know, I can confirm that there is interest. And I can also add that it's not just the Galaxy. You know, Club Tijuana, his old club, Xolos, that's where DC United acquired him from. Xolos would have interest in bringing him back. I don't know how serious or if anything's happened, but you know, it's not just the Galaxy that are interested in Paul Arriola. Yeah, I think that I agree with everything you said, guys. I think that he's just a really proven good commodity in MLS. He probably has a little bit more to reach if maybe you can get it out of him in the right system. I did like the idea of playing him a little bit further forward in Hernan Losada's DC United system. I did like that and just the possibilities and rather the combinations that came with him and Julian Gressel. I thought that the 3-4-2-1 was really the only way, I guess, theoretically, that you could, or the best way to play Gressel and Arriola together. And I still think that that's something that could work if you were to stay in DC United, and I'd be fine with it. I know maybe I'm a little bit higher on him than you are. Another wrinkle to this is, as you noted, that he was in the Galaxy Academy for about 7 seconds. When DC United acquired him from Xolos for about, I believe the transfer fee was $3 million, they also had to send the Galaxy a stupidly exorbitant amount of allocation money for his homegrown rights. It was like $500,000. And then they kind of passed that buck forward when DC United charged FC Cincinnati a stupid amount of allocation money for a player that wasn't on their team since he signed Lucho from Liga MX after he had left DC United. So if I'm DC, maybe they're less petty and more professional than I am. I would say whatever we agree, you might have to throw $500,000 allocation money to make up what you made us give you for a player who wasn't yours.
Well, putting some ideas in people's heads out there. We'll see what happens there. Final one in odds and ends. Ignacio Piatti retires from professional soccer. Shout out to Nacho, one of the most entertaining, best players in this league. We got to keep his memory alive. Nacho forever on those great Montreal Impact CCL teams and playoff teams as well. Oh, my. How much time do we have in one show? We'll see how long Andres lets us go here. The biggest stories of the winter transfer window, now that we've gotten through everything else. Two head coaching openings in MLS right now, LAFC and the Houston Dynamo. Everything else has been filled. Sam and Felipe over at The Athletic are reporting that LAFC are in talks with Renato Paiva, he's a Portuguese manager. He's been at Independiente de Valle in Ecuador. He just won the first title in the history of the club there, and that you've heard of that club, I'm sure, if you're an MLS fan, you listen extra time. Miguel Angel Ramirez was their previous manager. He's now the manager for Charlotte. Christian Dahome, Pedro Vite, Sebas Mendez, all those guys came from De Valle. Moises Caicedo was linked with Atlanta United for a long time. I mean, this guy came from Benfica B. This is sort of his jump into being the manager of the first team. 3 losses in 30 games and makes history. This is a guy right now LAFC are linked to. It makes sense given their South American links that we've talked about before. It makes sense given that this is a club MLS has been to in the past. There's clearly some sort of connection between folks here and folks there. And he seems like a guy that could be in the profile that they like. I mean, what do you think about this, Tom? Does this make sense?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And well done by Sam and Paul, as always, for getting that info. All I had was that John Thorington was going
Tom's
to be
such an insider on the breaking news thing. He has to like low key compliment. He's like working little angles where we're just out here saying.
Come
stuff.
On, Sam's my mentor out here. I gotta you know lay out for this. But yeah, all I had was that John Thorington was in South America to interview a candidate, which isn't much information at all, given I couldn't even give you a country. So that's super interesting. I do know that Antti Razov was very impressive in his interviews, and he's definitely a candidate, but. My assumption slash the little bit of whispers I heard that I figured they were going to go to South America and you know, they haven't said that a deal is done or they're in advanced talks, but this would kind of fit the bill for what you expected for LAFC's next manager after the Bob Bradley, the very successful Bob Bradley era. And it makes a lot of sense with their culture, with their locker room, with the players they target, with their networks. I think that this would be, I'm not going to pretend that I've watched any of these games played, but from what, you know, we've read about them, from what you guys have talked about them, and the pipeline that you just mentioned about Independiente Del Valle, I think that this is kind of the profile of a coach that you'd want for, you know, LAFC in the, you know, post Bob Bradley direction.
And there's two pipelines here, right? Like, he's Benfica B. True. He understands the European market, what clubs that LAFC are trying to sell these young South American players onto might be looking for and have ins to those clubs and that sort of soccer culture. And then also now he has the understanding of South America as well and credibility there. And an ability to change locations and succeed. I mean, that's a big one. We talk about players adapting. You have the David Goss theorem, which is it takes a year for them to become their true and full selves. You know, it's the same with coaches, I would imagine, too. Just plugging somebody in, be like, oh, you succeeded here and here. Like, you can do it in the U.S. and MLS. That's not universally true, but at least he has that in both sides. So,
two little things to note. One is his predecessor at Del Valle was Miguel Angel Ramirez, yep, who's now the head coach at Charlotte. And the other is my understanding of the way it's set up at Del Valle, and this is a club that's obviously emerged more recently and is, you know, aggressively pushing academy players through, is that the role of a manager there is actually a little different. It's less like they have full control, and it's more everyone works as a group, and they're sort of the figurehead. And so it's interesting to see how that fits in with, obviously, Bob Bradley was the power vacuum in LAFC. He's now gone. John Thorington, you would assume, is taking over more control of the way the team plays, the way the team is put together. And maybe this is a different relationship that could work better or works differently, but that's what John Thorington's looking for.
Yeah, it's an interesting nugget there. Some other stuff here. Jozy Altidore, we still don't know what his future holds. Is he going to be bought out by Toronto, transferred, etc.? But I would assume bought out. So TBD on where we see Jozy in 2022. Kai Wagner says he wants to be sold. That's per Transfer Market. He'd like to move on. Any other rumblings?
Say that every year.
Yeah, he said probably, that last year, I mean, too, to be fair.
Understandably. Yeah.
And
so
then he signed,
hey, now's
contract.
The time, guys. Yeah, well, hey, you know, these are complicated decisions, Tom. Anything else out there that you're hearing as far as rumblings, as far as sales in MLS this winter? Like, who are names that you would toss into it? Is Pepe going to go? I mean, Dallas keeps saying he won't, but kind of seems hard to imagine. We've already talked through, like, Buxa and some other big ones. Tati, anybody else on your mind?
Yeah, Tati's a guy to watch. Ricardo Pepi, it's cooled off a little bit just from the mania that was happening, because I think Dallas did a pretty good job of trying to stomp out that fire. I have heard, you know, very, very minimal signs that maybe they're not 100% married to he's definitely staying. You know, maybe it's 99 or 98%, but there's a little crack of sunlight there. Again, it all depends on offers and whatever happens, and I guess how much he wants to try to push his way out. But yeah, Tati Castellanos. I haven't heard anything on James Sands lately, but this time last year, I was hearing maybe this time this year. So he definitely has interest in Germany, the usual places like Holland and Belgium. But, you know, I don't know if anything's serious. I don't know, you know, what everything's looking like. Ernst Tanner just said it on a press conference this afternoon. The market in Europe is dead. That's what people have been saying since the beginning of COVID. But, you know, some deals are still getting done. Yeah, there are a ton of players to watch. There's a ton of Justin Che is another one. Bayern Munich still want him. Other clubs still want him. Dallas, too, are trying to keep him. So I guess we'll see with all these and on at how the rumors, the reports, the interest, the offers, all that come out. Silly season is the best season, isn't it?
Europe is dead. That's the negotiating position that I would have if I was Europe. Like, it's dead, man. No money. We got nothing. Like, hey, we're gonna throw a couple dollars your way, euros, whatever it is. But hey, don't expect much from us, all right? Don't expect much.
We're talking Marshall Plan over here. Yeah, didn't realize we'd get there.
Yeah, I got to rebuild, all right? Orlando City linked with Facundo Torres, which is an interesting one. He'd be about $10 million, say the reports from Penarol. And he's a big-time talent in Uruguay. So that's one to watch. Are there any other clubs in MLS, Tom, that you think are going to make a big signing? We have Timbers and Tacos hitting us up asking, who's going to make the splashy moves? Anybody, you think, or are we going to be waiting until the summer?
I don't know. Orlando would be the front runner with the new ownership, but it's out of Luis Muzzi, like, they did sign Nani. They have the track record to Pato, big names, all this stuff. And again, now with the new ownership, 3DV spots open, that'd probably be most likely. We'll see what If Houston are going to walk the walk after a lot of talk with new ownership, there's definitely going to be more money there. I don't know if it's going to reach, you know, the big name like that, but those are probably Toronto with Insignia. That stuff is real. I don't know if it's going to happen. I'd be leaning right now if I had to guess that probably not, because I think that he'll stay in Europe. Maybe he'll work it out with Napoli, but that is a real thing, that real talks that are happening.
Behind Forge beating Cruz Azul, if Insigne signs with Toronto, so burn it all down. The one thing to throw out there is there's rumors about Jaime Lozano, who was the Mexican Olympic national team coach over the last 2 years with Houston.
Interesting.
And this is sort of what we've all been waiting for, is like, sign a Rui Diaz, right? Sign a Zelrat. Sign a player coming out of Liga MX, whether they're Mexican or not, who's ready to play, not 32, not 33, at 27. And that's what you want to see for Houston as a big signing, is bring a guy in who's ready to win now, who can be a difference maker, but bring them in probably from this region. You don't have to go to Europe because of the market that you're in and because of the success those players have had in the past.
Completely agree. There'll be a lot more that happens over the course of this holiday break. Remember, we won't be back until January 10th. We'll be tweeting about it. We'll be doing all that. And who knows, maybe we'll get dragged back in to do a special if something big drops. But you can follow Tom. You can follow MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app. All the news is there, as well as, I value my Athletic subscription. Paul and Sam, obviously, Jeff Carlisle, a ton of other people in this sphere doing great work as far as reporting goes in local markets and nationally in Spanish language as well. So we'll retweet the stuff out there. Things are going to happen. And get at us if you see something that interests you. Meanwhile, we'll finish up with this. The 2022 MLS Cup odds from BetMGM are out. First, Ben Baer hit us up. He was flaming Dave and I in the group chat because we can't figure this out, man. I'm not a math guy. The pluses, the minuses, what's it all mean? Ben Baer says, hey, extra time if somebody else other than us are confused here. Since you guys can't figure this out, plus 160 on odds means if you bet 100, you win 260 total. That is your original $100 and 160 in winnings. And then the other side is negative. What you have to bet, if it's negative 160, you got to bet 160 to win 100. Do you understand this better, Tom? I think that's right. Yeah, that's
I'm a New Jersey guy. Okay. Of course.
Anyway. Oh, okay. All right. I see you here. We got the odds out there on MLSsoccer.com. You guys got these up? Any of them interest you other than LAFC tied for first with New England and Seattle at plus 700? Let's go. BetMGM shares ETR's LAFC. Delusions, baby. That's wonderful. Gotta love it.
You want to know what we think best value is?
I don't know. Whatever. Just any interest you. I mean, I'm looking at Vancouver down at plus 6,600. Interesting. As a long play.
The two that jump out to me are Columbus and Nashville. You'd assume Columbus takes a jump this year just because it can't be worse than it was last year. And they have most of the roster together. They have the stadium now. So that would be one that I would look at. I think it's plus 2,500. And then Nashville as well. I think
Nashville is plus 25 and Columbus is plus 2,000.
There you go.
It's pretty.
Nashville's one of those teams where if they make the playoffs, they're dangerous. Like that's how they're set up. So it doesn't even matter the ebbs and flow. Not that it doesn't matter, but the ebbs and flow of the season are going to happen to everyone. But as long as they make the playoffs, they're a factor. Boom.
Yeah. Down at the bottom, as I said, I like Vancouver at plus 66. And
just
then
throw it on Houston, Weeby.
Montreal at plus 6,600. Who are the final two tied for 27th? It's Cincinnati and Houston paying off at plus 10,000.
Put it down. Come on.
Why not? Just give it a try. Give it a try. Go check them out at MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, or at BetMGM. Our final one in the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Culture Soccer hit us up. Biggest surprise of 2021 in North American soccer. Can be anything. A transfer. Someone being canned. A game. A loss. A team. A project. I would say, personally, it's the Canadian national team.
Men's or women's or both? The women won a gold.
Yeah, I was thinking of the men, but you could easily do both. Yeah. I was thinking of the men in the sense of like being at top of the octagon, which, you know, now we might think, oh yeah, it makes sense. Look at all this talent. But when the octagon began, I don't think that didn't seem mm-hmm. necessarily like a likely or realistic target. I mean, their rise has been absolutely incredible. So I think that would be the biggest surprise of 2021 for me, or NYCFC not choking in the playoffs. You know, that's a pretty big surprise on the road.
I'd say from an MLS perspective, the Rapids being number one in the West,
yep.
I thought they'd be good. I didn't think they'd be that good. And Hany Mukhtar's MVP run. You know my theorem. Mm-hmm. It takes a year, but It took a year, but it,
just
it hit
owning that theorem.
Stronger than I expected. And so I'd say those are the two big surprises that stood out.
You guys are going positive. Doyle's not here. Somebody's got to bring the negative. The idea that that both LAFC and Columbus missed the playoffs is still wild to me. If you think about January last year, we were here. Even going back to Doyle, his tears were, if these teams don't win a trophy, it's a disappointment. And they both missed the playoffs. We were all thinking it. I think that was kind of the biggest surprise. And I guess Gabriel Heinze, we were all singing the praises of that hire. It looked perfect on paper. It looked really good, and it could not have possibly gone worse.
Yeah, that was a train wreck.
Wow, Tom.
Yeah, those are good. Perfect. Those are good. You really filled the shoes. As we prepare to leave here and send everybody on their journeys for the holidays, however they celebrate them, we're thinking of you. Thanks for listening. That's been the best part about doing this show than hanging with these guys on Mondays and Thursdays, is hearing from people that enjoy the show, who say, hey, this is the way I keep up with MLS. I love it. Really appreciate you out there. Any final thoughts here? Any thoughts on Tom's, you know, full-length debut? I thought he really... I think he made a case for himself, in future camps here.
I think he showed the understanding of the game model that we wanted. I think he showed his fitness levels as well. He showed his qualities. And that's what we're just trying to give him a platform to showcase himself. That's all we're doing. If European clubs are interested, we'll listen, but Tom will probably break the rumor before he gets signed.
The one thing I will say, if we're looking for constructive feedback, you know, pace of play, you know, news breaking chops, but then the internet connection, we got to work on that. Really got to work on the internet connection.
I'm going to be the guy that you talk yourself into in the January camp because there's no other soccer going on, and then you're going to look back in 4 years and be like, oh, why did he get a cap?
Yeah.
And on that note,
we'll look back and say, man, that Bosnia Herzegovina roster was rough. Shout out Uli Lainez.
Oh boy. Oh boy. At Tom Bogert, go follow him, folks. That's where the breaking news goes down. We're out of here until the new year, until January 10th. So that's it for us. I gave an opportunity on the last show to Kalen and Doyle, Dave, to have final thoughts for the folks at home. This is your opportunity, unless you need a break for any reason.
No, I'm good. I echo what you said. Being in Portland this weekend and just having a ton of fans come up and tell me that they hate our takes and that they, you know, are mad at us, all those things. It you really do feel that what we do, affects people and people enjoy it. And I think for all of us, it's about the community. We've been part of all three of us have been part of this nerd soccer community for 15 plus years, and we love it. And we're hoping to build it and make it stronger. But to have the COVID year where we didn't get to see anyone and to get to some stadiums this year and see fans and get to talk with them, I'm excited and fingers crossed that there's more of it next year. Also, the Voyagers fan section sold out in under an hour for the USA Canada game in Hamilton. So I'll see you in the Steel City early next year. I'll be wearing 5 jackets. So I hope everyone's there.
Big Hamilton guy. We know that. All right, everybody. Big thanks to you for rolling through this year. We did more than 100 shows. We did hundreds of hours of content, obviously, and you were here with us to experience it. So we appreciate you, and we'll be back January 10th. As always, hit us up on Twitter if you need anything, 401-206-0MLS, extratime at MLSsoccer.com.
And last thing, I just want to say thanks to Anders.
Yes.
Who keeps us on track, who keeps us on the rails. And in honor of him, I will say this. There is zero chance Seattle Sounders win CCL. Love you, Anders.
Yeah, we should have Ben Bear come on and give that one for him. Just as a special gift to him. And congratulations to Anders, who is engaged.
Woo!
Let's go. Clap it out for your guy. This would not happen without Anders, and he puts up with our inane idiocy for far longer than he deserves.
He's the Max Verstappen of this show.
Thank
you. He stays on his own track.
Exactly. Thank you, Anders. Don't crash us before we get to the finish line. We'll see you in the new year. We'll be right back.